Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
And a very good evening to you, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. You can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. Lots to get through as usual. And as usual, we will start to see with what to see in the night sky, such as we have a night sky coming up as we race towards the solstice.
Mm-hmm. Yep, good fun. May the 8th. Looking forward to this. International Space Station back in our skies.
Oh,
yep, like to see that until May the 22nd. So where are we now? We are on the 5th. So in 3 days' time, May we get 5th. To see evening passes. That is, there are a few mornings, I think.
The first one you mentioned there on May the 8th is at 4 minutes past 11 in the evening. Now, I think just one tomorrow morning at 3 a.m.
That's okay.
I know you may be up, but I definitely shall not. But a slightly more sociable hour, 4 minutes past 11 on May the 8th, which of course is a Friday. You'll see the International Space Station.
Mm-hmm. And just talk about the ETA. Awkward meteor shower is due around about now.
Today.
I was out last night. I reckon I got to see one. It was a monster. I just happened to be out late in the evening as usual. And one big long streak across the sky was a big fella. And I just love doing that just to see them just whizzing. It came from the west, about northwestish to southeastish. And I'm not sure if that was part of one of the aquarids or not. And just to put you in a picture of where we were last week, Mercury, Mars, Saturn and Neptune were very low in the brightening dawn. And Uranus was a faint star-like object getting farther below Venus at nightfall every single day during the week. Now this week, Mercury is gone. It's hidden low in the glow of sunrise, so that's disappeared. Uranus is also lost in the sunset as well, so it just proves that the planets do move quite quickly across our universe. Magnitude -3.9 is Venus, fine sight still in the evening. It's getting lower and lower in the sky, that's the only thing, but it's creeping back towards Jupiter at magnitude -2.0. So the brightest one at the moment is Venus. And if you look in the west-northwest during evening twilight, it sets around midnight all month. And Jupiter, magnitude -2.0, is the next brightest planet after Venus, of course. And it shines high. This is the good thing about Jupiter. And it shines high in the west and is about 35 degrees to Venus's upper left. And between around about two stars, Castor and Pollux, in Gemini as well. So watch over the next while, watch Jupiter and Venus close in towards each other over the next 6 weeks or so, and they will have a conjunction on June the 9th. Just to put that in your diary, put that ready to go. They will pass just 1.6 degrees apart. That's really close. That's really close, and they're quite distant at the moment. So just watch these as they fly through the sky as well. So unfortunately, Mercury and Uranus gone. Neptune, where's Neptune gone? It's sort of disappeared.
Hidden by in the glare of the sun.
Yeah,
also
gone,
at the moment.
So there's not too many around at the moment. So there you go. Yeah. So the ones to watch: Venus, Mars, and Saturn are thereabouts. But you will need a pair of binoculars at least to see these. Jupiter, you can see with the naked eye as well, which is a rather a cool thing to do, and I enjoy that as well. So there we go.
Thank you, John. As you mentioned, Jupiter and Venus, they will be just a few, 1.6 degrees apart on Saturday, June the 9th, just as a reference. That is a little less than the width of your fingertips at arm's length. Just to give you an idea of what exactly 1.6 degrees is. In old money, now we have, or in new money, whatever one you want.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the moon and the sun, of course, also very bright objects, usually, if we can see the sun at all. That's another story. Anyway, at the moment, the moon is an 85% waning gibbous moon, so it is getting smaller and smaller, and it is not currently above our horizon. It's set earlier in the day from our perspective here in Dublin, but it will rise in the early hours of tomorrow morning at just about quarter to two in the morning, and it will be at its highest and due south at 4:48 a.m. tomorrow morning, and when it sets also tomorrow morning, just before 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, it'll be down to an 82% waning gibbous phase. So only a slight difference between now and then with regard to the phase. And as I mentioned, I think we are heading towards the third quarter moon, which will be on Saturday the 9th, in the evening to be precise. So we also have the sun, of course, and that will rise tomorrow in Dublin. That's on Wednesday the 6th of May at 5:41 a.m., which is 14 minutes earlier than a week ago. And you may, I think we probably all notice the stretch in the mornings as well as the stretch in the evenings. And local or solar noon in Dublin, that's when the sun is at its highest and due south, and will cast its shortest shadow of the day. That's at 1:21 p.m. And the sun sets at, can you believe it, 9:03 tomorrow evening, 13 minutes later than a week ago. And then we'll have twilight, various degrees of twilight, until just after midnight, when astronomical twilight ends 5 minutes after midnight tomorrow evening. And that's when officially nighttime will begin. So that means we'll have 26 minutes more daylight than a week ago. Tomorrow, another 3 minutes and 39 seconds of daylight, when there'll be 15 hours and 22 minutes between sunrise and sunset.
Yeah, lovely, jolly. Just to mention also that you mentioned the moon was at apogee at the moment, which is the furthest bit away, 405,839 kilometres from Earth, and the Eta Aquid meteor shower peaks again this evening. Best time to see, sort of after midnight thereabouts, as we swing into the meteor shower itself, and you would be expecting to see around 20 meteors per hour in a good dark sky. Not so good really in Dublin city centre, but you will get to see a few, and some of these are really nice. Not as good as the ones during the summer, where you get to see 120 odd per hour, which is supposedly in a good dark sky. So there we go. So look for that this evening. So, yep, that's about it on that one. So, as usual, tons of stuff to get through. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you on 0871 791032. If you have anything to discuss, talk about, want us to discuss, we'd be delighted to do that for you.
Indeed we would, yes. Do get in touch, 0871 791032. Now, Artemis 2, the astronauts, the four of them, they're back from their trip around the moon, and they seem to be doing a tour of many institutions, mostly in the USA, as from what I can gather. But they're going off and talking and promoting their, telling people about their adventures on their travels around the moon. First people to venture that far in over 50 years. I see they met the President of the United States.
Yeah.
In their travels, but they've been to, they've been to many, an event, around the US in the last week or two since they got back. So, of course, what's up next? Artemis 3. Now, originally, John, as you may remember, Artemis 3 was initially intended to land on the moon in 2027 or 2028, but then they changed that plan now. That's only going to go in a low Earth orbit, but it's going to check The idea is to check its other systems, mainly the docking and undocking of the planned lunar lander. Which brings us to the question of when will this famous lunar lander be ready? Now, as you may recall, NASA have contracted both SpaceX and Blue Origins to develop a lunar lander, but they're both way behind time. Now, the SpaceX's one, they're going to call that the Starship Human Landing System, or HLS, and Blue Origins is called the Blue Moon Lander. Both of them are in, I presume, hopefully in advanced stages of development at the moment, but they're still way behind. I believe the Blue Origins, Blue Moon is a bit of a slightly simpler type of lander, and that is planned to be used on Artemis, the Artemis 5 landing, and Mr. Musk's SpaceX is going to be used on the Artemis 4 lander. But we'll see. I've been wondering about this for some time. Are they going to? Is it going to be ready?
Yes, I guess you think so.
Yeah. Now, they say with SpaceX said they've passed 49 of their milestones related to development of the of their lander, and Starship have flown 11 suborbital missions over the past 3 years, and the next flight, the 12th flight, which is will be later this month apparently, will be the debut of a larger or more powerful version 3 of their rocket. And of course the Starship comprises, that's the big 33 engine super heavy booster, which is that absolutely massive, most powerful rocket ever built and designed. Were all the flights, Tesla, there's been a few of the flights. Some of them weren't completely successful. Some of the engines didn't fire, but still without even a few of them not firing, it seemed to be incredibly powerful. It's still powerful enough to certainly get it into orbit. But I suppose that's the big wonder at the moment, I suppose, is will they be ready even for Artemis 3 tests, never mind the planned Artemis 4 in 2028. However, stay tuned to the astronomy show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM, and we will keep you posted over the next year or so.
Well, hopefully, yeah.
We'll let you know.
We shall certainly do it. I was just talking to Mark Anthony earlier on. He's our traffic guru who takes us through the afternoon to get you home safely and all that sort of stuff. And we were just discussing, because he loves Elon Musk.
Not.
And he was asking, did we have any news about Elon Musk? So there we go. So that's him in the news just at the moment. So developing rockets and things. But he has been fairly quiet, I suppose, recently in the last sort of few months, but he's coming back into the thing again, isn't he? Yep. So no doubt he'll announce something. Now, we got an email in from Eamon Mackey, and just to remind you that dear, hi Ben and John, that's you and me. He wanted to get us in touch with us in relation to the Reach for the Stars 2026 astrophotography competition organised by the School of Cosmic Physics at the Dublin Institute for Advanced Studies. And this, I remember this when it started nearly. And it's in its sixth year now at this stage. It's open for entries from photographers across Ireland. I still struggle with astrophotography, so I'll sit back and watch this and maybe just go to the exhibition. Sive Leahy is another one in that group as well, and she's the Education and Public Engagement Officer at DIAS, which is Dunsink Observatory, and it's you can contact her as well if you want to. So I'll give you the name of that in a minute. Now, the photographs that can be entered are in three categories. Okay, so if you are interested, you can get in touch with them. So the night sky in your hands, these would be images taken with a smartphone only. I suppose you and I would take a fair few photographs of the night sky looking for aurora and all that sort of stuff. So a smartphone only without telescopes, capturing an astronomical scene. Yeah, okay, that's pretty good. Out of This World is category number two. This is images of astronomical objects, including the sun, moon, planets, and deep sky objects, such as nebulae, star clusters, and galaxies. Again, a little bit out of my league, but one of these years, I suppose, or days, whatever, you and I'll get out there and take a few photographs and see what happens. And the last one is Back on Earth. These are images that depict astronomical features alongside landscapes, landmarks, nature, buildings, and heritage sites. So that's three nice topics. And the entries will be indeed judged by Dan Dennison. He's the visual editor of the Irish Times. Donnacha O'Driscoll, he's the president of the Irish Astronomical Society. And Professor Peter Gallagher, who we know. Yeah, he's the senior professor as the head of astronomy and astrophysics. And we've Niamh Shaw there as well. And she's a scientist and engineer as well. So lots of information. We'll give you more information as the weeks go on this particular thing. So if you want to get involved in this, look up Dublin Institute for Advanced Studies and the photography, the astrophotography competition, so to say. So that's we'll say that again in a week or two. And maybe 3 or 4 weeks, whenever it's going to finish. So the entries must be taken between June the 3rd, 2025, which you've probably got loads of already, and the 10th of May, which is only a few days' time. So it's reeling into the last few days of this. So shortlisted entrants will be announced in late June. So keep an eye on that one as well, okay?
Thank you, John. And I see the James Webb Space Telescope. It's had a little peek at a rocky planet, an exoplanet, that is. This planet was discovered back in 2019, but this super Earth is about 30% larger than our planet. It's located 50 light years away, and it orbits its host star in just about 11 hours or so, so it's very close, and therefore at going around that speed, you can imagine it's very close and very hot. And because it's so close, it is tidally locked, so the time it takes to orbit its parent star is equal to the time it takes to rotate on its axis, just like the way the moon is tidally locked with Earth, that we always see the same side, the same face of it, we never get to see the far side. So what they've done is, the planet is so hot that when it comes around the far side of the star, the James Webb Space Telescope can measure the heat coming off it, and the other energy wavelengths that it radiates can tell them a little bit about what the actual planet is made of. So you can actually, this planet, which is 50 light years away, and they can tell by comparing the signal with known rocks and minerals that we have from the Earth, the Moon, and Mars, and the people studying it say they've ruled out an Earth-like crust rich in silica and granite, and these crusts normally form through water-driven geological processes and plate tectonics, which they say recycle rock and allow lighter minerals to rise to the surface. Instead, they say that their data points to a surface dominated by basalt, you know, that black rock. Mm-hmm. I think that's what isn't the Joints Causeway.
That's
the rock is
basalt. Have you been at that?
I haven't been, no.
You should go, it's brilliant.
Anyway, that's a dark volcanic rock, rich in iron and magnesium, which is commonly found on the Moon and Mercury. So they said the planet contains very little water, which is not surprising if it's so hot and so close to its parent's star. And it's kind of amazing that something so far away,
yeah,
a planet, mm-hmm, orbiting a star 50 light years away, that can actually tell what's there, what it's made of, what's on the surface, what's not there as well. And I think that's the first time that type of work has been done, and I'm sure there'll be lots more like it.
Mm-hmm. Now, NASA Chief Jared Isaacman, wait until you hear this, says he's fighting for Pluto. And he's very much in the camp of making Pluto a planet again. So the NASA chief wants to restore Pluto to its former glory, and I totally agree. And if we remember back in 2006, the IAU, which is the International Astronomical Union, stripped Pluto of its planethood because it didn't meet all three criteria to make it a planet. But it is a planet.
Well, it depends how you define it. Well, that's very true.
We look for a tenth one or something. So, yeah. So I'm going to watch this space with interest now.
What's his argument? I'm not against calling it a planet as such, but it just depends how you define a planet.
Yeah, well, he wants to reclassify it as an icy world and calling it a dwarf planet, which it was.
It was. Oh, yeah. It was demoted to a dwarf planet, and then it was it demoted further, or they decided that a dwarf planet didn't meet that definition. Which is a definition that's chosen, decided by a group of people.
Yeah.
And then it became a Plutoid or trans-Neptunian object, or
I think, or he's like me,
he whatever just love he just wants. Yeah, just love, but then you're going to have to, I suppose, depending on what criteria, you may have to include Sedna and
that's what Oway, that's true. Well, and, all planets. Great.
So that would make Planet 10, and probably a few others whose names I can't remember at the moment.
Yeah,
well, you don't want to end up with deciding there's 100 or 1,000 planets, don't you?
Well, it would give us another something to look at through telescopes and things. Just remind people that they do that anyway, but
you'll have to. It's hard enough to remember the names of 8 or 9 planets.
Anyway,
so you might have to learn in school in a few hundred years' time to learn the names of 200 planets.
Yeah, he's slightly more powerful than we are in the world of
astronomy. I know, but you have to convince the AU.
Yeah, I was watching, as I normally do, early hours television, which do a lot of how the universe works, all that sort of stuff as well. Mars was on topic last night. And seemingly billions of years ago, it was like Earth and had water and everything, but it was hit by this monster of an asteroid, which heated the whole place up and burnt off all the atmosphere and burnt off all the water, and then it took millions of years again to try and recoup itself. And it's still trying to do that, but it's gone through a couple of sort of changes over the years. So at the moment, we know it doesn't have anything up there, so it's unfortunate. But at the North Pole is what they said, and I didn't know this, that if you were to walk from the North Pole south, you would actually be walking uphill because of the indentation that this asteroid or whatever hit it made so many years ago. So it's a bit of a flat spot at the top. So you'll be actually walking uphill before you got to the equator.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, the equatorial diameter of the Earth is larger than the polar diameter. Yeah. So, yeah, you could say that.
So it started off all the volcanoes and things like Olympus Mons, which is 3 times the height of Everest, Mount Everest. And it's only because of the gravitational pulls that I suppose Everest is held at the height it is, because it'll sink if it gets any higher. It might go an inch or two, but that's about it.
You wouldn't get anything that high on Earth, because gravity would pull it down. And the gravity on Earth, or on Mars, is only 1/3 that of Earth. And thanks to Aaron for your text. Another Pluto fan. He says he's from there. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think John is from there as well.
I definitely think so.
He says definitely a planet, but I don't care whether you call it a planet. I just want, being a scientist, I just want, what's the definition? And I'll go with that. If we can agree a definition,
I don't need things like that.
I'll go with that. And of course, he said, there's so many planets we don't even know about. Well, that is absolutely true.
That's very true.
There's no doubt about that.
Caught this one as well, going slightly a little closer to home. We're in the middle of a global warming session at the moment. And we're having polar ice caps melting, etc. But we are heading towards another ice age in about 10,000 years' time. And that could change a little bit by a year or two because of the current global warming situation. But what would happen if both polar ice caps melted? There's a big question for you. So the sea levels would rise by approximately 65 to 70 meters which is 200 feet in my language, submerging major coastal cities like New York, London, Tokyo, and displacing billions of people. And this catastrophic event would cause massive global coastline reshuffling around and halt ocean currents like the Gulf Stream, etc. So there'd be a huge ecological thingamabobs going on. So apart from the massive sea level rise, the also would have irreversible climate disruption without the white sheets reflecting sunlight, which is a thing we don't often think about. The ocean and land would absorb more heat, leading to sustained extreme global heating. Oceanic and ecological shift. Large influxes of fresh water would disrupt ocean saltiness and currents like the Gulf Stream, and it would trigger severe erratic changes in global weather. Geographical rebound. This is the massive weight removed from Greenland and Antarctica, which would cause lands beneath to slowly rise. You've got to think about some of these somehow. And the human crisis, of course, as well. The displacement of billions of people and loss of arable land and constant extreme weather, hurricanes, typhoons, etc., which we're getting at the moment, but there would be an awful lot more. And this would create a global humanitarian, a big tongue twister for you. So there we are. Massive sea level rise is the big problem. 65 to 70 metres of sea level rise. And I don't know if you've seen the film Waterworld, have you?
No. I know of it. Kevin Costner.
Yeah, Kevin Costner. This is one where the ice caps have melted and there's only bits up the top and bits down the bottom left. The rest is just covered by oceans. So there you go. So don't mean to bring gloom and doom to you, but yep, not very pleasant.
Thank you, John. I just finished with today, May the 5th. It was, 65 years ago today, May the 5th, when Alan Shepard became the first American in space. It was a 15-minute suborbital flight. It was made about 3 weeks after Yuri Gagarin made his, which he went a full orbital flight, wasn't he? He went around a couple of times. And, yeah, it was only 15 minutes of weightlessness he experienced. So, but he did reach 116 miles and then came back to Earth in his Freedom 7 space capsule, which splashed down in the Atlantic Ocean near the Bahamas. I know there was some issue with it. It went upside down or nearly sank,
yeah,
and then it righted itself.
That I watched early this morning. Again, it was straight on after the Mars program, and there's a button that he presses inside that actually inflates some balloons to upright it, make him upright again, is, there was no problem there at all. So there you are.
Thank you, John, for that and for your news items. And that's all from us this week here on this edition of The Astronomy Show, where it's music all the way now until 2 a.m. here on 103.2 Dublin City FM, because up next we have Dublin's Greatest Hits, followed at 10 p.m. to midnight with Nigel Wood. He has his ear to the globe with his world music mix. And from midnight till 2 a.m., Dave Barry in After Hours and his mix of jazz, blues and soul. And he'll be here with us until 2 a.m. But please join myself and John at the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from all corners and dimensions of the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodbye, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John. And all that is now.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.